World News Today, brought to you by the Admiral Corporation, makers of Admiral Radio, America's smart set, and post-war makers of Admiral major home appliances. By shortwave broadcast direct from important overseas stations, as well as leading news centers of our own country, CBS correspondents are waiting to bring you a complete report from the world's political and battlefronts. But first, here's Douglas Edwards.
The Allied advance in Italy continues to be a slow and tough operation, with the Germans putting up a stiff fight. More news direct from the Italian theater in a moment. The British radio has just announced that after a day-long lull in the Allied air offensive from Britain, observers on the Channel coast report that two waves of Allied planes have flown out over the direction of northern France. Dispatches from China say that fierce fighting continues in the Luoyang area, with the Japanese hammering the city itself from three directions. Now, Admiral takes you to Naples. Farnsworth Fowle reporting.
Strong forces of heavy bombers of the 15th AAF today attack rail yards and airdromes in northern Italy in coordination with the ground offensive. At Ferrara, Mantua, Vicenza, Padua, Piove di Sacco, Treviso, and Mestre. In today's communique appears a list of towns and summits that have fallen since the capture of Mount Maio. There will be more to add tomorrow. This morning, as two of us drove down a cart track on the lower Garigliano sector, we rounded a corner and saw two men walking ahead of us. The first was a German, disarmed. Right behind him, an American doughboy with bayonet fixed. We offered him a lift. The prisoner got in the back seat of the jeep. I sat beside him so that his captor could sit in front. That way, Private Anton Sokolovsky of Chicago had room to keep that bayonet right where he wanted it, within 6 inches of the German's uniform. He's a stubborn one, he said. He wouldn't move. Earlier in the morning, Private Sokolovsky's platoon had been in the final attack on Santa Maria Infanta. A sniper in a house there had picked off one man after another in the platoon. They surrounded the place, and Sokolovsky went through the door to root him out. The sniper dropped his rifle and surrendered. The German in the jeep was that sniper. These two men had been fighting each other almost without rest for 60 hours. The battle had touched them in different ways. The loser, once he had given up, had lapsed into a stupor. Only the sight of that rigid bayonet shining along the blade and point kept some spark of consciousness alive as he bounced around in the back seat, never quite impaling himself. For the American soldier, the job wasn't over, and so he had kept the fierce alertness of combat about him. He was at white heat as he told what the sniper had done. There is no bitterness among soldiers like the feeling against the sniper who, from safe concealment, shoots men down, and then at the end raises his hands in surrender, putting himself beyond the reach of their immediate personal vengeance under the rules of war. During that brief ride, the war had seemed more real than earlier, watching the tanks, planes, and artillery hammering the German rear guard behind Santa Maria. I return you now to New York.
More news in just a moment, but first here's Warren Sweeney with a message from Admiral Corporation.
Defrosting your refrigerator every week is a messy job, isn't it? How would you like to own a refrigerator that you never have to defrost? Of course you would. Then your after-the-war choice will be the Admiral refrigerator, the one that will never need defrosting. This is true because there'll be nothing to defrost. No bulky, frosty freezing unit. Therefore, no defrosting. You can readily see how much more food storage space this will provide when the cooling unit is gone. And in all this space, foods will stay fresh and crisp without covering. Admiral engineers have found that by building the cold-producing coils along an entirely new principle, it is possible to maintain a high degree of humidity, creating a condition of gently moving, moist, cold air that has the freshening effect of cool dew on foods. So, if you want the new, improved ideas in refrigeration, no defrosting and no covered dishes, you'll want your peacetime refrigerator to be an Admiral, built by the makers of Admiral Radio, America's smart set. Now, here once again is Douglas Edwards.
The United States recently opened its own radio station in Britain to tell the people of Europe the true news of the world and what to expect in the near future. For a description of this station, Admiral takes you to London, Charles Collingwood reporting.
The American broadcasting station in Europe has its premises, appropriately enough, in a section of London that is inhabited by the peoples of many European countries. One corner of a building in this polyglot and somewhat exotic atmosphere has been taken over by ABC, as everyone calls the American broadcasting station in Europe. There's not much room, and the 90-odd people who operate ABC are practically in each other's laps. Most of those people, even those who broadcast in European languages, are Americans and have been sent over here from America. Because ABC exists here in London, because it has been thought important to present a peculiarly American point of view to the people of Europe. Happily, the framework of the United Nations is not so restrictive that it precludes different emphasis by different nations on different things. ABC exists to give the American emphasis. ABC is on the air right now. Its call sign is recognized everywhere as unmistakably American. It goes like this. To Europe, that means America is on the air. And that phrase from Yankee Doodle is as American as Uncle Sam's striped pants and star-spangled waistcoat. At this moment, ABC should be putting out a program in French, and we'll try to pick it up. This is what the people of France are hearing from America.
Français, les transports à l'intérieur de la France deviennent de plus en plus difficiles. Les communications ne peuvent que devenir plus malaisées encore. Les événements peuvent se précipiter. Dès à présent, les habitants des villes doivent faire l'impossible pour évacuer les enfants, les femmes, les vieillards de la campagne. Ils doivent aussi faire l'impossible pour constituer des stocks alimentaires. Les villes peuvent être coupées de tout ravitaillement. Les Allemands ont pillé toutes les réserves accumulées à Paris et dans les autres grandes cités. Habitants des campagnes, fonctionnaires, docteurs, cheminots, aidez les gens des villes. Faites-leur parvenir des vivres. Accueillez leurs familles dans vos maisons. L'intérêt général exige que chacun se substitue aux autorités défaillantes pour préserver la santé et la vie des Français, l'avenir de la France.
I won't try to translate that for you word by word, but this is in general what was just being said to the French people. Transport to the interior of France is getting more and more difficult. It can only get still worse, so from now on, they said people who live in cities must do the impossible and evacuate women and children and old people to the country. And ABC urged the French to hoard food. The cities of France may be cut off from all food, they said, and already the Germans have pillaged the reserves of food in Paris and the other big cities of France. This announcement ended by urging the country people of France to help the city people by getting food to them and by taking their families into their houses in the country. Well, that's what ABC has just been saying to France. But these advices to the people of occupied Europe are only part of the service. ABC is on the air 8.5 hours a day in half a dozen European languages. The basis of its report is news, truthful news from the American point of view. The OWI in America has a special wire to the American broadcasting station in Europe and maintains a constant service of news. Besides that, special recorded features are sent from the United States, and the whole operation is carefully attuned to American policy. It was a tremendous job getting ABC set up. Most of the equipment had to be shipped over here from the United States. Some of it was sunk on the way. Finally, after many difficulties, the studios were run up in a record-breaking 2 months. And 2 weeks ago today, ABC, the American broadcasting station in Europe, made its first broadcast to Europe. Both Robert Sherwood, who is OWI's overseas director, and Brewster Morgan, who is in charge of OWI broadcasting over here, and hence of ABC itself, both of them say that they could never have done it all without the help of the BBC, which gave everything it possibly could to help put ABC on the air. And for that matter, this program and all of our Columbia Broadcasting System programs from London could never have been made without the help of the British Broadcasting Corporation. The BBC and ABC are doing complementary jobs.
They're talking to the same people in different ways, and they are both doing their jobs well. It has been a hard job to get an American broadcasting station in Europe into operation, but it has been done because a lot of people have been willing to work hard, to work intently and earnestly for something they believed in. These people believed that the voice of America must be heard. This is Charles Collingwood in London, returning you to Admiral Radio in New York.
One of the greatest jobs being done in this war is moving supplies over the hump into China by the Air Transport Command, which has conquered one of the world's most dangerous flying areas. For an interview with a veteran pilot just returned to the States, Admiral takes you to CBS Louisville, Bill Slocum, Jr. reporting.
Here in Louisville today are four rugged young men who've just finished a long and dangerous tour of duty, jockeying bulky transports from India across the jagged peaks of the hump and into China. For the time, their job is done, and they are now embarked upon what they consider an even more dangerous mission. They are playing a few dates on the rubber chicken, "We appreciate what you are doing for us" circuit. In other words, they are building morale, civilian morale at that, by making speeches in war plants, at luncheons, and shaking a million hands. I've asked one of the boys, and that's the word because he's only 24, to submit to another verbal mauling with me this afternoon. He is Captain Bill Bevan, late of Muscoda, Kansas, and now of the Air Transport Command, China-India Wing. Captain Bevan, how do you like your current assignment?
Well, they tell us this helps production of planes, and after a few months of flying supplies into China by air, I'll do anything that'll get us more planes.
Tell us something about the hump, Captain.
Well, at first it looks like an easy flight. It's only about 3 hours, you know. Then it suddenly dawns on you that there's not one single spot where you could land. Then you discover two more things, mountains and Japs.
Well, why don't you get plenty of altitude and fly over the mountains?
Because you just can't get that much altitude. Every plane is loaded to capacity, usually with high-octane gas or ammunition or some other highly explosive material. You just got to set your course, pray for good weather, although you know better, and hope your instruments are true.
How about that weather, Captain?
It's the only place in the world where the flying weather is always wrong. It's usually too cloudy and foggy to see much, and that means instrument flying, or you're liable to hit a cloud with a rock in it.
The rock in this case meaning the top of a mountain. Isn't the weather ever good, Captain?
Sure. Then you have to fly up and down mountains at treetop height, so the Japs won't shoot you out of the air.
How many missions over the hump have you?
63 round trips.
What cargo do you fly usually?
Things designed to kill Japs or save Americans and Chinese. Airplane engines, trucks, ammunition, 100 octane gas, everything. Even mice.
Mice?
Sure. I know a major who got bumped off a trip because somebody had a higher priority. He didn't mind until he found he was outranked by a flock of white mice. The docs wanted them in China.
What were you flying over the hump?
Two engine jobs, mostly Curtiss Commandos. Pretty good once you learn how to handle them.
What was the toughest part of flying the hump?
Sitting in the plane at night when you couldn't see your wingtips, it was so black, and hearing some guy in another plane, some guy you knew pretty well, asking for a bearing on his radio because he was lost in the middle of those mountains. The static would be awful. You could hear the tower at Kunming trying to get through to him, and you could hear him trying to get through the tower. Then you'd hear your friends say, "Out of gas. We're bailing out. So long."
Thanks, Captain Bill Bevan. I've watched you tote a chest full of campaign ribbons around Louisville with a fine grace, and you were very kind to come up here. So, the mic's all yours for that message you have for the American people.
Thanks. I've only been home a short time, and, well, do you know of any place I can get some laundry done?
Captain, don't you know there's a war on? I return you now to Admiral in New York.
Field Marshal Lord Ironside, the former chief of the British Imperial Defense Staff, has told British Home Guardsmen it's quite possible that when we make our great invasion, the Germans will make some sort of effort to land in Britain. Ironside said there's no doubt the presence of the Home Guard in Britain stopped the Germans from invading the country when they had a chance. Commenting on the possibility of counter-invasion, he said, "If the Germans try, I know that the Home Guard will know how to deal with them. Treat the Germans like the vermin they are. We have full confidence in you." And now for news from the Pacific, and an interview with the commander of Fleet Air Wing 2, Admiral takes you after a few seconds' pause to CBS Pearl Harbor, Webley Edwards reporting.
One of the most useful air units of war out here in this theater is Fleet Air Wing 2, performing a dirty, tiresome job with great courage, tenacity, and heroism. For the first time comes one of these far-traveling Navy flyers to our microphone, and here's Lieutenant Commander Robert W. Lehman of Manchester, New Hampshire, whose wife and three youngsters, the youngest a boy whom he's never seen, are in Key West, Florida. Commander Lehman commands a patrol squadron of Fleet Air Wing 2. Commander, a good many people have the idea that all Navy planes operate from carriers.
No. The Fleet Air Wings, of which there are several in the Pacific, are shore-based planes. We use Liberators, Venturas, Coronados, Dive Bombers, Catalinas, and Mariners. Our squadron uses Mariners, the PBM. The carrier-based planes have their work, the Army planes have theirs, and we have a job that fits into the general scheme of this Pacific warfare.
And what's that, Commander Lehman?
Well, search, patrol, and convoy work. Also, and this is steadily growing, air sea rescue work. The Martin Mariner is particularly suited to landing on water and picking up flyers. Our squadron is often used to cover other bombing missions in case anyone is shot down. Then we pick them up.
You also do some bombing, though.
Yes. All Fleet Air Wing 2 planes are used as bombers at one time or another. For example, some of the wake bombings were done by the planes of this wing. We all carry bombs, and some of our boys have damaged a sunk Jap ship, South Truck, and Farnaby. Most of our missions there have been over Farnaby and the Carolines, hitting harbor and waterfront installations and picking off Jap ships. We also had a grandstand seat over Kwajalein and watched the whole invasion. It was beautiful to see the precision of the attack and the cooperation between the Army and the Navy and the Marine Corps.
What's the average distance of your flights, Commander Lehman?
Well, we fly nonstop for around 14 to 15 hours on the average. You can figure that out for yourself. It's tedious, tiresome work, and most of the time it's not very spectacular. There is, of course, the danger of enemy planes. Sometimes we run into bad weather fronts, and then the weather changes from one minute to the next.
But you do have your exciting moments.
Oh, yes, that's bound to happen in this kind of a war. For instance, Lieutenant Harold W. Schwert of Brooklyn was on night patrol when one engine cut out. He was about 400 miles from the base. He jettisoned his bombs and all the movable weight in the plane. But one bomb bay door wouldn't close, and that put quite a drag on the plane. He had to mush along barely fast enough to keep aloft for about 4.5 hours. But he made a night single-engine landing with no damage to the plane. It was one of the best pieces of work I've ever seen. I would like to say to the folks back home that this is a vast ocean out here with unbelievable distances. And it's a big war. We'd all like to be home, but there's a great deal yet to do.
You've heard Lieutenant Commander Robert W. Lehman, Squadron Commander of Fleet Air Wing 2 in the Central Pacific. This is Webley Edwards at Pearl Harbor, returning you to Admiral in New York.
For the news at home and an interview with a Marine combat correspondent recently returned from the Pacific, Admiral takes you to CBS Washington, Don Pryor reporting.
This is one of Washington's loveliest days, and the green parks are filled with people brightly dressed. For all that, the city is tense and bulging with speculation. But when it comes to real news about impending events, the lid has been clamped on tight. The storm is too close. This will be a busy week politically, and before it's over, President Roosevelt will have more than enough convention votes to win a fourth-term nomination on the first ballot if he wants it. Congress is going on a six-day week in a home-stretch sprint to wind up its business in time for recess for the summer political campaign. But there's a lot of work to do. Father Orlomansky, the priest who got in trouble with his bishop because he went to Moscow to visit Joseph Stalin, apparently has given in to the bishop's suspension order. He failed to show up in church this morning. And now I want you to meet a reporter, Diggory Venn, who used to be drama editor and general assignment man for the San Francisco Chronicle. He got married about 2 years ago, in March 1942, and he and his wife had a little apartment perched on the side of San Francisco's Telegraph Hill. Then things changed. He joined the Marines, and for the last 20 months or so, he has been a combat correspondent. New Caledonia, the New Hebrides, Guadalcanal, when it was making our biggest headlines, Australia and New Guinea. He just got back to Washington, and he's now a second lieutenant. I want him to tell you something about his job.
It's just like covering the police beat or a city hall assignment. Usually you attach yourself to headquarters so you know what's going on, and then you take a section of the front line and cover it, just like you would any other story.
Well, do you do any fighting?
Whenever they need you, and you always have to be ready. You're a Marine first, and a correspondent second. In my case, I didn't do any actual fighting, but I would like to make a plug for my regiment. They fought 42 engagements on Guadalcanal, and we had the first two enlisted Marines to get the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Well, what kind of stories did you like best?
Personal stories about the men. But the best play I ever got was on a story about a beautiful Red Cross hostess in Australia, a girl named Ellen Brooke.
Women always get the play, don't they?
Those Red Cross girls deserve it. They're wonderful to see after a year or so in the jungles. One of the greatest thrills I ever had was last Christmas Day. I had just arrived at Milne Bay, New Guinea, after a long time up in the wilderness. I was walking along the beach trying to pretend that Christmas was just another day and that Milne Bay was a good place to be when I came across a long, cool, thatched building with white women walking in and out. They were Red Cross hostesses, and it took me about 2 minutes to find out that one of them was an old and very good friend of mine, Jean Fay from San Francisco. She had seen my wife only 5 weeks before, and she gave me a graphic eyewitness report of how she looked, what she wore, how she fixed her hair, and what she said, even how she still tossed her head when she scored a point in an argument.
I think I know what you mean.
And then, Jean said, she had a Christmas present for me. It was from a friend of ours in New York who had given it to her when she left the States with instructions to pass it along to the first mutual friend she found. And she found me on Christmas Day.
Well, I'm not going to say it's a small world, isn't it? But I guess it is. I return you to Admiral in New York.
The British Ministry of Information today issued a Southeast Asia Command statement on Jap casualties. It's not a very precise statement. Here's what it says. Allied troops in Burma are now inflicting on the Japanese a number of casualties which proportionately is rapidly nearing a higher point than any reached in any other theater where the Japanese are engaged. That sounds like it means that for the number of troops engaged, the enemy is losing more men in Burma than he is in any other active front. In a review of the past week's fighting, the statement says the Jap drive into India has failed completely and that the enemy is in an increasingly precarious position as the monsoon approaches. And now once again, here is Warren Sweeney with a word from Admiral Corporation.
The strains of martial music have always played a great part in the morale of all our country's wars. This one is no exception. And on the battlefronts, in the training camps, and in the homes of America, Admiral radio phonographs with automatic record changers are playing their favorite recordings. The Admiral's fidelity of tone and flawless reproduction of any recording afford a new high in enjoyment to every listener. And the Admiral automatic record changer is so simple to load and unload. With its capacity of 12 records, a complete program can be presented without going near the instrument. And only Admiral has Slide Away. Admiral's Slide Away is so constructed that by merely opening the cabinet doors, the complete phonograph turntable and automatic record changer emerge to view, waist high, convenient to reach. Before the war, Admiral was the world's largest manufacturer of radio phonographs with automatic record changers. And the reason America preferred Admiral was because of the many distinct advantages over other types of automatic changers. So, if your post-war plan includes the purchase of a radio phonograph combination, you'll want an Admiral with Slide Away and the Admiral automatic record changer. As more and more of our men speed across the oceans, the work women can do behind the lines becomes increasingly vital. WACs have proved so efficient and so valuable to the Army that commanding officers are requesting their services in greater numbers than ever before. 10 times as many WACs could be used for the Army as are available at the present time. Women of America, take your place in the Army of the United States. The Army needs WACs. The WAC needs you. World News Today is brought to you each Sunday at this hour by Admiral Corporation, makers of Admiral Radio, America's Smart Set, and post-war makers of Admiral Refrigerators, Admiral Home Freezers, Admiral Electric Ranges. Be sure to listen again next Sunday when Admiral brings you World News Today by shortwave, direct from leading news centers of the world. Warren Sweeney speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The WBBM Air Theater, Wrigley Building, Chicago.